Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
Now it's time for very serious football talk with the man who met his wife on a blind date, chaperoned by his parents.
They actually came along on the first date with us. That was a...
No!
I rode in the back seat. I was 22.
The man who needs to take a minute to remember the names of all of his children.
Do all of your kids have the same first letter?
No, actually. Let me think. Do any of them? Tucker, Mason, Cole, Isabel, and Lucas.
The man who can defend you in court... but will probably choose not to.
I'll capture this on a public setting right now. I am an aggressive cuddler in a consensual sense.
Comma, officer.
Good grief, he's a pastor too? When does this guy sleep?
You will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
It's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on Almost Entirely Sports.
Usually I say that Tuesdays are Seth Kaiser Tuesdays. Not today. Today is a Chris Jones Tuesday. In fact, just straight up Chris Jones Day. Seth, how are you feeling today?
Woo! That's how I'm doing.
I had a lot of feelings as I saw all at once, within like 5 minutes, like six reports that, oh, the Chiefs and Chris Jones are close. And at that point, I started, you know, like, writing out the framework for a story and everything. Because at that point, you think, ooh, something's really happening because everyone just tweeted about it. But in that whiplash moment, I had a lot of feelings. But one distinct feeling I had is, thank God Seth got the Christmas present he wanted here. He did not open the box and find a little fake poop toy in there. You got the $85 million present.
We did not open the mystery box, Josh. We did not open the mystery box of, well, yeah, but, you know, you could spend that salary cap money to get two Anthony Hitchens. You could spend that salary cap money to get three Daniel Sorensens, or maybe even four. We didn't do that. We didn't do the mystery box. Instead, we said, hey, look, it's a boat. We need a boat. We love a boat. Let's take this boat. And I just could not be more thrilled. There were a lot of lessons to be taken from this.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is that the Chiefs don't leak stuff until they mean to leak it,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you're dealing with an agent like Chris Jones's, who's kind of on the quieter end, doesn't leak rumors and stuff. As soon as I saw they're getting close,
yep.
I said, someone from the team leaked it, which means they know what's going to happen.
Yep.
And I started celebrating immediately.
You cracked open a bottle of sparkling grape juice that you've had left over from New Year's, and you guzzled one at on Mahomes Day. But you're at this point, you are bloated on Welch's sparkling grape juice.
Oh, I'm going to need to stop. I'm going to develop something of a problem here. It's awesome, man. The Chiefs, there's so many things to celebrate about it. I'm trying really hard not to be the I was right guy, because that's tiresome in sports, and we have way too much of it.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, there's just so much talk about Chris Jones and his fit and salary cap implications and all this stuff that the whole time I felt like I was taking crazy pills.
Yeah.
As people were saying, well, you know, he might freelance a little too much for Spagnuolo. And I'm like, I have a hard time believing that. and you see this elite player on the field as people are trying to pick holes in his game. It's like, well, you know, he's only an above-average run defender. It's like, really? Well, okay. That's
a good thing.
He's
that's
only,
the most important
he's only
part
above
of his job.
Average.
Yeah. Yeah.
At a non-important – I mean, somewhat important, but not really.
Less important.
I just – it feels very vindicating. And then the salary cap stuff, where I think you've been on this train with me.
Yes, sir.
That
choo-choo.
The salary cap is definitely real, especially with these mega deals, but it can be massaged. It can be influenced. And that's exactly what the Chiefs have done here.
It's so malleable. And like that, we've talked about that some already tonight, and we can get to that. But the larger conversation, the sort of meta-narrative of the last few weeks, seeing how much things have changed and how much the needle has moved for various people and what they expect and what they should be rooting for, what fans should be rooting for, all of that. I've found all of that tremendously interesting with some of the narratives that you've mentioned there, right? Where look, you can have the opinion that you would rather spend that money elsewhere, but
absolutely,
but no one should be saying they would rather simply have money. Or if you do that, you have to also point out where your frustration lies with Chris Jones. And I asked you this. I think it was the last thing I asked you last week. I said, hey, if I give you a contract that's just Frank Clark's contract and Chris Jones has signed it, do you sign it? You said, absolutely. I want to take at least a minute outside of all of the main narratives for you to have a chance to give one more little refresher course as to why you have no hesitation about specifically the value of Chris Jones.
Sure. So with Chris Jones, there's a couple things. First, he's consistently productive, which is obviously important. He's consistently productive at the most important facet of defense in terms of helping disrupt the passing game, right? That's obviously important, and there's stats out there everywhere if you look, like how often he wins versus double teams, QBR when he's in versus QBR out, whatever. There's various things you can look at. The biggest thing is you just watch the tape. You can see an easy difference. So that being an elite pass rusher alone makes him that important to where I would be very in favor of signing that deal regardless, right?
Yep.
What separates Chris Jones the most, though, is unlike almost any other player, and there's very few who can do this on the defensive side of the ball as pass rushers, he has the ability to take games over. He has the ability to win individual snap after individual snap to take over an entire drive or a series of third downs. Go back and watch the Patriots game from last year, for example, or the AFC Championship, some of those third downs, things like that, or the fourth quarter in the Super Bowl. He has the ability to win in an individual way that can swing entire games. And that's something that gets overlooked in the stat sheet, even though his stats are tremendous. But his ability to take over, it's not something that can really be quantified, and so it's sometimes I'm uncomfortable talking about it too much. Mm-hmm. But it's happened often enough that it's something you can depend on, that if there is a close game, a game that comes down to between the difference of a few snaps, having Chris Jones is more important than having another elite pass rusher without his singular skill set. And that makes him so valuable to the Chiefs, because to win in January, you're trying to win one game, right? One game at a time. And it's just such a tremendous thing for them to keep him around, because he can swing a handful of snaps. Much like in the way, now obviously Mahomes is much more important. He's a quarterback.
Yes.
But in the way Mahomes can take a play that would be negative and turn it into a positive all on his own, mm-hmm. Jones can do that on defense. Again, at a much smaller scale, instead of it being like, 15 plays, it's two or three. But in the playoffs, two or three snaps is a huge deal.
Yeah. And we were texting about this earlier, and you mentioned that this is similar to your Clyde Edwards-Helaire logic that I am still trying to give you partial credit on, because here we're not talking about acquisition costs. We are talking, though, about I'm directly taking this another element also. We are talking about opportunity cost, though, as opposed to acquisition cost, because the opportunity cost you mentioned, hey, this could have been four Dan Sorensens. Does that do anything for you? And you tweeted this out earlier today that I think is a really important philosophy. And there are people that have not, who I think are really smart and good at looking at football, that don't take on this philosophy. But I tend to lean your direction here, where you say that good coaches should be able to get NFL-level talent to play at an average level with easier-to-find players. You pay the superstars whose production can't be schemed into the defense. And I think that might be the entire argument, but taking that as the logic for why you pay Chris Jones as opposed to spreading that out evenly among two, three, or four other guys, I found very persuasive.
I appreciate that. I was due to be persuasive about something.
I also already agreed with you, so persuasive may be the wrong word, but I thought it was very well articulated.
Oh, well, thank you.
That's
where it comes down to coaching. There's always this debate about scheme versus talent. And scheme can make up for talent, or specific types of skill sets can be much more valuable in one place than another. Bill Belichick has fleeced the NFL for years because he knows exactly what he wants in a scheme, and guys that are more valuable in New England might be less valuable elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You rely on coaches. Let me back up a step here. Everyone in the NFL is good. You know, we say things like, oh, this player's trash, blah, 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 whatever. No, they're not. Every player that makes the NFL was the best in their high school, probably the best in their college, and one of the best in the country at any given moment.
Yeah.
These guys have talent. Now, NFL average guys, they've got a ton of talent, but there are quite a few of them out there. And those guys can be schemed into positions to succeed. Take a look at Dan Sorensen's production under Bob Sutton versus in a more selective role where he wasn't asked as often to do things he's bad at with Steve Spagnuolo. It's a big difference. And that's where it becomes important to understand. People are saying, well, you're better off with two $8 million defenders. And my question is, shouldn't your coaches, in theory, be able to have average NFL talent, which if you trust your front office, you should be able to field some average talent elsewhere on your defense. Maybe a little sub-average, right?
Mm-hmm.
But mostly average. You should trust your coaches to let those guys be average. The things that you can't replace, the things that you can't scheme, is Chris Jones, you know, chucking aside a center and being in the quarterback's face within a second. And that's what I think you build the core of your team around. And when you look at the Chiefs, their top seven guys are a group of guys who cannot be replaced just by some schematic magic. And it's impressive. It is. People can call it a top-heavy roster, but if you look at their like top seven kind of money guy type guys that everyone thinks of, you've got a bunch of guys who have a legitimate argument of being one of the best in the league at their position, and that's incredibly impressive.
That's a list that you can see, by the way, in the latest Chief of the North newsletter. Seth was able to write and put out a story on Chris Jones within like a few hours of the news breaking, which you can see the link there on Seth's pinned tweet on Twitter, at RealMNChiefsFan, if you want to get in on the Chief of the North newsletter, which is still $12 for a year forever if you sign up now. Which is just, you're never going to get Chris Jones money because you're giving away your product for free. Chris Jones wouldn't play for $12 per game.
I agree. It's just been so rewarding, though, and it's just been so much fun. I can't stop, man. Tomorrow will be the 1 month anniversary, and I'm thinking of doing something crazy in terms of a special.
Stop
I mean, we'll
it.
See. I might do that buy one, get one free finally. Maybe I'll hold off on that until the football season starts.
$12?
I don't know. But I've loved easy. I have loved being able to bring content to people very, very quickly, and I love what I do for The Athletic. I love it. But I also like the ability to write about some smaller scale things and really looking more in depth at things that aren't necessarily with this broad overview where there's a couple day turnaround. I like being able to get things and react in the moment and not worry about, well, is this big enough?
Yeah,
and that's what I got to do with Chris Jones today. I was able to write about Mahomes the day of that signing. It's been a lot of fun, and I've still been able to really go in depth. The Patrick Mahomes article, you know, the best plays that didn't count, part two got pushed back again
right.
because of great, great news. So I'm excited to finish that.
My only complaint about, again, the Chief of the North newsletter, you can get the link from Seth's Twitter, it's his pinned tweet, is that it's too good for the price you're charging for. That's my particular gripe here.
I know I'm failing to drive up exclusivity. I'm not following the In-N-Out model.
I don't know.
I'm just not following it. I'm not setting a price point for exclusivity. I'm just not doing it. I refuse. I think it'll speak for itself.
You should go and give Seth your $12, and then on the way out, just like as you walk into his house to hand him his $12, just take like one, just take a watch or something. Take something valuable on your way out, because Seth's just giving away great things for free. I guess he probably won't even press charges.
They might really need it. Who knows?
Yeah. See, there we go. Unbelievable. Again, like within kind of as we're kind of taking layers out of the Russian nesting doll of the Chris Jones signing here. We can have the conversation about why you prefer Chris Jones over, you know, two above average players or four average players or whatever. Got that. Check that box. What about the conversation about financial flexibility? I have a hard time saying that with a totally straight face because
45 minutes ago, the Chiefs had like $17 in cap space or whatever it was. That's barely an exaggeration, if it is at all. That was really recently, and since then they've given the quarterback $500 million and paid their franchise tagged player, something that is happening virtually nowhere else in the NFL right now. Do you have any fear about continuing to maintain flexibility for the next 3 years or so before everything really resets?
Here's what I would say. I think the Chiefs at the top end of their roster, barring some extra moves, which you can always make moves.
That's true.
Can always make moves. It's just whether it costs you a genuinely good player or not, right? They're the top end of their roster, cost-wise, is largely set for the next couple years now. But here's the deal. And people will say, oh, no, that means Charvarius Ward might walk for nothing. It really doesn't mean that, because they'll still be able to franchise tag him. The NFL really has this down to a science. They'll be able to use that to leverage a decent deal with him if they want. And you got to remember the next couple years, a Charvarius Ward deal, and, you know, we all see this, it doesn't really kick in the money until after a year or two.
Yep.
And so does it keep kicking the can down the road? Yes. Will you eventually pay the piper? Maybe in 7 or 8 years, maybe. If things don't go well, your best problem that you might end up having is you got to cut good players to keep better players. I call me crazy, but that's not a bad problem to have.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no, we only had this elite player for 3 years. We had to cut him. As opposed to what? Never having that elite player?
Yeah.
And then what? Eventually signing another non-elite player? Like what? I just don't see the fear there. Mahomes' contract allows them to be crazy flexible here for the next few years, at least when it comes to him. And then Jones, it kind of locks them in the next couple years, I would say, unless they make some moves, right? And there are guys who maybe could be at risk on the bubble next year, and that's just how it works.
Yeah.
But I'm comfortable with them being locked in for the next 2 years, because if you look at the roster and that top end, that core group of players, you're talking Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Mitch Schwartz, Frank Clark, Chris Jones, and Tyrann Mathieu. That's your core, right? Assuming they don't like re-sign Charvarius Ward right now. That's seven. That's a third of your starting lineup. And every one of them could make an argument for being like top three at their position.
Yeah.
Some of them an argument that's pretty solid for top one.
Yeah.
That's a good problem to have. Our roster's locked in because they don't want other players.
That's right.
You know, when it's like, oh, we could upgrade over Mitch Schwartz. No, you couldn't.
You couldn't.
And so you're naturally going to be right at the tip of the salary cap because you've got a great, great, great roster. I'm not worried about flexibility moving over. They've got guys they could cut. In a year or two, we'll know more about where the salary cap is. It's going to keep going up, guys. It's going to be okay.
And then even then, like on the Ward point, he's a restricted free agent next year, so that should not be a problem. And then they could tag him in 2022 and then do all that, then negotiate down the line. As far as like the idea of eventually maybe having to pay the piper, the funny thing is that eventually becomes a problem if you don't have things just falling off of the cap down the line. But right now, in 2023, I said this, we talked last week also, I think, but in 2023, the salary cap now includes Frank Clark, Chris Jones, Pat Mahomes, Harrison Butker, and that's the list. Now, will that eventually include Travis Kelce? Probably. Will that eventually include Tyrann Mathieu? Probably. Charvarius Ward? Maybe. You know, you can. Does Willie Gay Jr. eventually? Does he have a great rookie run and then have a big contract that kicks him by then? It's totally on the table. Absolutely. They're going to eventually end up paying guys there. But as of right now, they're not. And the reason that's important, by the way, Chris Jones, they could probably cut this in 2023. And Frank Clark also. All those guys are movable. Even Harrison Butker is, actually. No one's a lock on this roster except for Patrick Mahomes. But the reason that I think that's important isn't because I think they're going to only have four guys on the cap this time next year or something. They will certainly have more. But because as of right now, they have a blank canvas to then restructure these numbers around. They're not in a room that is two thirds full with furniture and then trying to figure out how they're going to fit in a giant bed or whatever. They've got the big pieces in place and then can decorate around it. Literally every year after really 2021 and 22, the cap goes back up again. I think even by then the flexibility is really, really clear.
Right. And some people that I've talked to, you know, there's some anticipation. You know, one of the moves that the owners tried to do was convince the players to put 35% in escrow.
Yeah.
I do think that move got a little bit misunderstood the more I read about it. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're saying, let's not pay you. They're saying, hey, let's make the salary cap implications spread out over a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's an argument that the owner should just take the hit,
yeah.
right?
Yes.
And that's where I think some of the pushback was. But it also demonstrates to me, and at least an opening salvo, against what could happen with the cap and them trying to spread out over several years, which means, you know, this fear that we have of this 2021 season where the salary cap drops $40 million and teams everywhere have to cut everyone. Well, here's the thing. If the Chiefs are put in that position, so is everyone else. And guess who has Patrick Mahomes to lure guys in for cheap one-year prove-it deals for when the cap bounces back up?
Yep.
Right? So even that, the Chiefs are probably better suited than most teams to deal with that emergency, even if it means making some painful cuts. Because, you know, if you're, you know, named whatever star wide receiver on some team that gets cut really unexpectedly who never would, where are you going to sign the one? Because no one's going to be signing long-term deals.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You're going to sign a one-year, $2 million deal or something absurd, right, because no one has any cap space. Where are you going to sign it rather than Kansas City, a Super Bowl contender with Patrick Mahomes? If you're on the defensive side of the ball, where are you going to sign it except to play next to Chris Jones and Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu to chase sacks and interceptions your direction?
Yep.
So I get that people are worried, and I understand that, but I don't think you're going to see it have this devastating effect because it'll be a shared effect across the league. It's not uniquely going to affect the Chiefs. So I'm not too worried about it in terms of flexibility. But again, I'm more of a free spirit with the salary cap. But here again, so are the Chiefs. So there you
right.
go.
That's they, true.
They're able to do it. They just made it work. They crunched the numbers.
And it looks like, I mean, it's not even going to, it seems like they're not even going to take the space that they could have gotten in year one because there's some creativity with the structure of it all and all of that. But, and some of that's still a little bit, you know, a little bit TBD, I suppose, at least publicly. But the other thing, again, like, you can have fear about either, you know, the cap being flat next year or in the long term again. But the reason that you want to have cap space is so you can pay your players whenever they earn a big next contract or bring in a free agent that you think can solve some of your problems. They've got those guys. Like, you know, yeah. And still, I'm always going to just, like, couch this by saying, you know, I wouldn't have made the Frank Clark move, and I've said that at every place along the way since. And they won a Super Bowl with him having some big moments. I'm not telling – that is not a look at how right I was. I'm just being honest. But – They bring in Frank Clark, and they bring in Tyrann Mathieu, and they bring in Anthony Hitchens, another one that we were kind of from the jump, like, are we sure? But they bring those guys in to stabilize three different units across the defense. They pay internally Tyreek Hill and now Chris Jones. They brought in and paid and restructured Sammy Watkins, and they've been able to maintain Schwartz and Fisher and Kelsey and the entire offensive line. And now obviously they're paying Mahomes. They've been able to do all of these things with the space that at one point existed and has now been replaced with excellent football players that are doing the thing that you want them to do for the money. It's a weird thing to be concerned about at this point, I think. And I love the salary cap talk. Like, I actually find it really fun and really interesting in the procedural parts of it, but this is the easy part now. It's hard whenever you don't have players to give the money to. Whenever you have players to give the money to, it gets easy.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, people should look back in time a little bit to when the Chiefs had plenty of cap space room.
Right.
And I got to tell you, they weren't a very good team. Now, I'm not saying you can spend your way to success. You need good coaching. You need the right players. You got to pay the right people. And so far, they've been very successful at identifying that. Do they have a couple contracts that they've given out that I wouldn't have? Sure. But they haven't been disastrous. And even those guys, I wouldn't have paid Hitchens what they paid him. I wouldn't have paid Watkins what they paid him. But those guys did contribute to a Super Bowl run.
Yep.
And they were legitimate contributors, not just token guys. And so, if those are some of your bigger free agency misses, I don't know. I feel like you're kind of crushing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the key is just to continue to have good coaching, be able to get the guys that you want that fit well into the system, and as long as they have Andy Reid on offense, I'm very confident they'll do that. On defense, you know, we'll see how things go these next couple of years. Steve Spagnuolo might coach his way to a new job opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, they've got a lot of guys waiting in the wings that are excellent defensive coaches, and Daly and House. I mean, they're well situated for all of this. And like you said, it's a good problem to have. It's you want the money so you can keep your best players. They're keeping all their best players. So it's weird that people want this hypothetical money to do what with? I guess bring in some high-priced free agents. But there aren't a lot of guys I would sacrifice on the Chiefs, the high-end guys, for another player.
Yeah.
There just aren't. It's like with the Jamal Adams versus Chris Jones talk. My thing was, well, I mean, hey, if they were able to swing a trade for Jamal Adams, I would feel a lot better about it because Jamal Adams is a stud. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like they were kind of breaking even. But I'd rather have Chris Jones.
Yep.
And that's where I feel like with a lot of their defensive players, a lot of their offensive players, I'd rather have Tyrann Mathieu. I'd rather have Frank Clark. I'd rather have Pat Mahomes. I'd rather have Tyreek Hill. I'd rather have Mitch Schwartz. Is Eric Fisher an elite left tackle? No, but he's a good one in a system that needs him to be.
Yep.
And so they've done a great job with it. So I'm going to hope that they keep doing that.
And that's the other thing, man. I feel like we're so in on this on the same feeling on where the Chiefs are at right now, which is that they have spent money on great players and are in a great position, which makes sense because they just won a Super Bowl, all of those things, right? The thing that I imagine people who don't immediately agree with us here in this conversation is that it's short-term gluttony at the sacrifice of the long term, but again, it's really not. The only place that it could be would be with Patrick Mahomes, because they have him on the books in 2031. And if you think that Patrick Mahomes is going to end up punishing the Chiefs for signing him to a 10-year deal, I don't think we've all been watching the same thing. Chris Jones's contract is gonna again. They can get out of everything in 2023. And if you think that any of these guys they're paying right now aren't worth that value, Clark being a hurt Frank Clark isn't. Anthony Hitchens has not been. A hurt Sammy Watkins isn't. We don't know what the health of those guys is going to be going in the next year. But I'm trying to do the thing where you try to get ahead of an argument before it comes around again.
Sure.
And I'm just having such a hard time even coming up with a valid one, I suppose.
Absolutely, and they ended up with Jones on a pretty reasonable contract.
Yeah.
For his value, he was willing to. You know, if you were to say, you know, it was based off the Frank Clark deal, which I mean, our colleague Nate Taylor, he's been saying this for months.
Yep.
And Matt.
Yeah. Nate Taylor and Verderam have been on this exact thing since the Super Bowl minimum.
Right, and it didn't matter what was going on. They basically said, look, they've talked. They all know what the deal is. They all know what the terms are, roughly. They're going to get Mahomes done first.
Yep.
And when everyone else was freaking out, Nate and Matt were sitting there. Guys, they're going to get Mahomes done first. Let's just see what happens. And then, obviously, COVID kind of freaked everyone out, and rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it created some uncertainties. But the Chiefs are clearly operating with the idea, like, look, as of right now, we're planning on having football. I think they will have football. We'll see how it goes. I think, you know, you're going to have a bunch of hiccups, but I think they'll ultimately end up doing with either empty stadiums or mostly empty stadiums. But you know what? I'll take it. I'll take some football.
Yep.
And they're planning it that way, and it's work.
Yep.
They are set up so well right now. It's almost freakish, the amount of talent on the Chiefs roster. They are absolutely stacked. And the way that, like, you know, people are like, oh, yeah, but the Ravens, et cetera, et cetera. I'll tell you, the Chiefs' defense still doesn't quite get the respect it deserves after a really strong run to close out last season,
because
they started off a little fuzzy. Mm-hmm. How's that? Just a little fuzzy.
A little fuzzy.
I think by the time you get into the middle of the year, barring injuries and all that kind of crazy stuff you can't control, I think the defense is going to be talked about not as one of the best units in the NFL, but as a good one.
Yeah.
And you're going to see a whole conversation shift occur where the Chiefs just have an embarrassment of riches at talent.
Yeah. The one thing that defensively that does give me a little pause still is still the corners, because it has been since they traded Marcus Peters, honestly. I mean, like, since Marcus Peters and Steven Nelson, for all whatever issues, whatever, all of that notwithstanding, they've both gone on to be excellent in other places and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But since they were here, I've been worried about the corners. Now, I will say, none of these contracts have cost the Chiefs a good above-average set of corners, because Tre'Varius Ward and Bashaud Breeland have been that, and you would expect them to be that again. But if there are injuries, there any, you know, Rashad Fenton, whatever, that gives me some amount of concern. Where again, back to the Frank Clark thing, that offseason, we talked about this. I would have found a corner that I liked enough to pay that money to instead of giving it to Frank Clark. But the Chiefs have one area of concern right now that does still currently have, like, Charvarius Ward, who qualifies as excellent young up-and-comer at the position, and Bashaud Breeland, who had a really nice 2019.
Mm-hmm. You know, Breeland has been, and I'm aware that his PFF grade was not good, and I've never looked into exactly what went into that for them. Here's what I know about Breeland. He played more than well enough for the Chiefs to warrant more than another one-year prove-it deal.
Yeah.
And so some of this, in my opinion, is luck. Because they've got now, for the second year in a row, a low-price, competent cornerback who has been a competent cornerback for years and isn't over the hill or anything like that. And so, I mean, some of it's luck. You know, and then Charvarius Ward, they identified some talent there, so good on them. Rashad Fenton, good on them. But the existence of Bashaud Breeland, and we'll see what happens with his potential suspension. I'm guessing he'll get suspended because, you know, the whole thing.
But it also, that was from the original one was from before the new CBA kicked in. So we, just as a quick refresher, we really don't know, just for fairness to say.
Maybe he's hoping they've forgotten. A lot's happened in the last few months.
It has. That happened 6 years ago. You cannot tell me otherwise.
Yeah, I barely remembered it. But they've gotten some luck in that department. And then some of it is that Steve Spagnuolo has done a really good job with his corners. And I think they're going to keep doing it. I think they're going to formulate a defense on the back end around a really talented safety duo. And then a third safety who can play a variety of roles while they slide Tyrann Mathieu to the slot. Yep. And I think that allows them to pay. I think Tyrann Mathieu's ability allows them to pay a little less attention to the cornerback room because they say, hey, look, we've got an elite guy right here.
Yeah.
We can slide him in there whenever we want to. Yeah. And it'll confuse defenses or offenses. They're not going to know for sure if that's what he's actually doing. Maybe he's blitzing. Maybe he's going to drop into a robber. We don't know. And so that is a very interesting chess piece. And, you know, you did point this out. He's one of those guys whose contract runs out after 2022. Let me think. 2019, 2020, 2021. His runs out after 21. I believe it was a 30-year deal.
I think that's right.
So they are going to have some interesting choices to make between in 2021, 22, and 23 when you've got Tyreek Hill, Tyrann Mathieu, Mitch Schwartz, and Travis Kelce all coming up.
Yeah. And the thing there is that in 2021, whenever there is probably a tighter cap because of, again, a flat cap that they weren't anticipating when some of these guys signed, you know what works out real nicely? You say, ooh, hey, Tyron, we really want to keep you around here for a while. Your cap hit this year is $19 million. We're going to scoot some of this money around, and we're going to go ahead and make your cap hit this year $9 million, and you're going to get way more money down the road after a TV deal again or whatever.
That's the way you do that.
Yep. It's just not a bad year to have guys running up on the end of their contracts in 2021.
It's not, because 2021 will be the year that you see some pinch. I think you might see it a little in 2022 as well. And then I think 2023, if you look at how the Chiefs structured Mahomes' deal, that's when they think probably the money's going to really start to fall.
Yeah.
And that's what you do with guys whose contracts are going up that you still want to keep around for another few years at least. Like a Tyrann Mathieu, you say, hey, look, yeah, you've got your $19 million cap hit this year. Let's sign you to an extension that pays you more money, but, you know, these next couple of years hurts us less.
Yep.
And we just watched them do it with Mahomes.
Yep.
And so how much easier is it to do with a $70 million contract than $500 million? So hopefully people learn. The salary cap is real. Maybe we shouldn't say it's fake, but it is malleable. And
super.
And the Chiefs, like you said, they literally had like $100 in cap space a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, they've kept around Sammy Watkins. They've re-signed Bashaud Breeland, re-signed DeMarcus Robinson. Now they've upped Mahomes. They've kept Mike Pinnell. They didn't lose a single major contributor because of money.
Right.
It just didn't happen. Maybe someone could argue Stephon Wisniewski, but he was a part-time starter.
Yep.
And so people need to understand the salary cap. And again, since that time of having a couple $100, they have spent like $600 million. Now, a lot of that was for Holmes' deal. But that should let people know there's almost always a way around it. And so I just hope people remember that the next time they start freaking out about salary cap implications.
I do too. They won't, but it's a nice thought. one last thing I wanted to talk to you about is something else that came out via the Chief of the North newsletter. I don't know how you got Patrick Mahomes' high school highlights. Frankly, I don't want to know. I feel like it's better the more mysterious it is. But I was going through that article earlier today, and it's bonkers. It's bonkers based on, like, just the amount that it looks like young Patrick Mahomes is crazy. Not surprising, because it is him. But it's just like, oh, yo, that's so clear. Like, if you showed me that video, like, oh, that's clearly Patrick Mahomes. And he was doing all this in high school, and then also wasn't that highly recruited and everything. Why did you decide to look into that, and then what did you find most fun about it? Because it's a great, fun, hilarious read.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I hope there's another benefit you get in the Chief of the North newsletter. Where else are you going to read about Patrick Mahomes' high school highlights and how they demonstrate major flaws in the scouting system? I mean, come on.
Yes.
Anyway, a video clip came across my Twitter feed, and I was like, holy crap, and it was Mahomes in high school. And so then I was like, whoa, man, where'd you get that? And it's like, well, you know, like Rivals.com has like high school tape and stuff, and that's where a lot of prospects upload tape so that they can be seen. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, oh, I'll take a look. And Mahomes, who obviously his dad knows how a lot of this stuff works, they had a ton of stuff on there, tons of highlights, tons of individual games and stuff. And I thought, man, I'm going to take a look at these. And like you said, the word bonkers is very appropriate. He made in high school. And these are there. I mean, there was one where he was rolling out right, and he hit the receiver at 50 yards plus down the field.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the best throws that I've ever seen him make.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's one of the best throws I've ever seen, and that's just not like for a high schooler. No, like I've never seen stuff like this. And so I also wanted to in some of the plays that they have there. It's not just him running around making plays, although a lot of it is that because mm-hmm. it's high school. But he also demonstrated some of the traits. I have no idea how teams miss out on him. And I know it's easy to say these things in retrospect, but I've written about this in terms of, like, his play against LSU when he was in college and his play in general. How he was a controversial prospect coming out of high school and college, because in high school he wasn't really controversial. He was, like, rated, like, 12th. And I think that might have even been 12th, like, quote-unquote, dual-threat quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane to me. Texas Tech was by far the biggest school to offer him a scholarship. And maybe I think there was some fear that he was only going to play baseball. I have no idea. But he was not highly recruited. And then out of college, he was considered, he looks good. But a lot of people weren't too high on him. You know, I mean, and there's been so many posts about this, you know, all the people that tweeted stuff or whatever. Look, we all get stuff wrong. What I don't get is how anyone watched Patrick Mahomes in high school. And even though he was raw or whatever, didn't look at the things that you and I are talking about. And seriously, if you haven't, go watch it. You will not believe some of these plays and the traits that they demonstrate. How people weren't watching him and saying, this guy's a superstar, is completely beyond me.
Because, again, people need to go look at it. But, like, you can see him feeling pressure in the pocket or not bailing out left before he has to. And all of those things. It's really, really fun. The one thing that I kept thinking about during it, and this goes back to now like a cross promotion that has nothing to do with you. There was an article that we had up on Arrowhead Report on SI a couple of weeks ago where somebody wrote about the imagination of Patrick Mahomes, like it being imaginative as a quarterback and doing things that are non-traditional in that sense. And I've been seeing it more in the world since then, I think. But the amount of times where people refuse to be imaginative about something that, you know, is either this is how we've always done it or this is just what I'm looking for and I'm not even thinking about it and just tuning something out. I it sucks that it happens in football because it's a sport that some of the best stuff that happens is a result of being imaginative. But I just have to mm-hmm. think that there are a bunch of colleges that just had no imagination about what they could do with a guy like Patrick Mahomes out of high school. And then it happened again out of college. And it bums me out.
And it definitely speaks to people are looking at things the wrong way.
Yep.
And it's kind of similar to the conversation, although that's kind of reversed, about like Mitch Schwartz. You know, he didn't get ranked in the top 10 tackles in the league. And, you know, a couple of the quotes in it got released because these are NFL coaching staff saying like, oh, you know, he's just nothing there. It's hard to call him elite, you know, when he doesn't have any of these specific traits. He's just so productive, though.
Yep.
It's like, what do you mean? So he's awesome, but you can't call him awesome because he doesn't have a great 40 time?
Right.
Like, it just doesn't make sense. And I think in terms of quarterback, you see some of that similar stuff only in the reverse. And in an even worse way, where you're not looking at traits. And I get why looking at traits can be dangerous because, like, if you look at the wrong traits, you know, Josh Allen might end up being a great quarterback, but he's got a lot of things to work on. But, man, does he have some traits, right? I mean, his arm is unbelievable. But some of the traits that they should be looking at doesn't seem like they are. They're looking for, well, how's his footwork? Man, you can teach footwork.
Right.
You know, how is you can't teach pocket presence. Right. You can't teach the ability to consistently throw accurately. And now by messing with someone's arm motion and teaching them footwork, you can help improve consistency. But the ability to just throw a ball well is God-given.
Yep.
And that's just it. It's a talent issue. And so many people seem to say, this doesn't look like all the models we've seen for what we're consistent. Like Joe Montana, for example, his footwork was unbelievable. And so it's like, man, well, we need someone with unbelievable footwork because he'll be just like Joe Montana.
Right.
Well, the problem is there's still a level of talent there.
Yeah.
And so that's where I think people miss the boat to an extent with Mahomes, is they're looking for the wrong things in quarterbacks. And I think you're seeing a shift in the league. You know, it's the Russell Wilson phenomenon. He's like, oh, if he were a few inches taller, he'd be a first rounder. And no one in the room said to anyone, do you not hear how insane that is?
Right.
Like, he's that productive. He's that good. He's making these, you know, are offensive linemen that much taller in the league than they are in D1? I don't think so.
Right.
So why are we assuming it'll be a problem? And you're starting to see that a little more with Mahomes getting selected by a smart coach like Andy Reid, with Lamar Jackson coming in, Deshaun Watson, who actually has been a little more out of control in the pros than he was in college, but that's because, you know, the offensive line's trying to have him killed.
And so is his coach,
but
yeah.
You see a more non-traditional statue-in-the-pocket style of play. And look, both are great. Peyton Manning and Tom Brady are great.
Yeah.
Right? Dan Marino was great.
Yes.
But the idea that greatness has to look a certain way is just silly. And that's where people miss the boat on Mahomes, I think. But honest to God, I was watching these highlight things. Go to Rivals.com, too, and you'll see even more. But first, obviously, you know, subscribe to the Chief of North and read the article.
Yes.
And some of those plays, I mean, they are jaw-dropping. I can't imagine what it was like being on the other team.
Yeah. I had the thought I was reading, like, we should see if we could, like, talk to someone who played defense against Mahomes in high school. Because I bet they would be the least surprised by the outcome of his career out of everyone. Because no one else sees anything like that. Seth, we've gone absolutely too long as a celebration of Chris Jones Day. I feel like it's deserved. Again, you can get the Chief of the North newsletter. It's $12 for your entire year. And it stays that rate forever if you sign up now. You can see that at RealMN. She's on Twitter. Plus, tomorrow, you, me, Nate Taylor, we'll do an episode of Times Ours, Chris Jones edition.
Yeah.
That drops tomorrow. Wherever you get your podcast, just search for Times Ours. Seth, thank you for being here, and happy Chris Jones Day.
Happy Chris Jones Day, my friend. You take care of yourself.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to Seth Kaiser of The Athletic and the Chief of the North newsletter for joining us. The last thing for me today, one thing that we haven't gotten to yet, is a piece of audio that I thought was pretty interesting and good perspective from Sam McDowell of the Kansas City Star. He was on here on 810 on the program earlier today with Seren Petro, and they were obviously talking about just all the Chris Jones-related stuff. And he took it back to a certain point from the Chiefs' recent history, and then also, you know, evaluated something, made an interesting point about kind of what the Chiefs would have been willing to do to lock up a Super Bowl and what ultimately ended up happening instead.
It really just shows you the difference in the last two general managers, I think, that the Chiefs have had, and I'm sure you've talked about this already today, but I mean, John Dorsey was let go from this franchise because of their salary cap situation. We all looked at going into this offseason with the Chiefs as, you know, they've got a tough salary cap situation, but it was worth it because they won the Super Bowl in 2019. Well, somehow they've managed to bring all these guys back and keep this same team and fit in under a salary cap that, of course, the number was out there, spread across social media, that once had $177 in space this offseason, which somehow seems like forever ago based on the contracts you just added. And I understand that number had already included Chris Jones on the franchise tag and Patrick Mahomes. But to convince a guy like Patrick Mahomes to take a little bit of a hit in the short term and get the big numbers in the back end of his contract, I mean, that's what set up what happened with Chris Jones today.
Obviously, Sam covers a variety of topics there that I think are all interesting and valid in their own way. But the thing that has stuck with me since I heard that earlier today, and you know, we've touched on it kind of in various forms over the course of the show, but this was a future, this was a reality worth mortgaging your future for. And the Chiefs didn't actually, but it would have been worth it. This is a difficult cap situation that they may have been stuck in because they were able to go win a Super Bowl, and yet they've already worked their way out of the difficult parts of this cap situation. They could have won the Super Bowl and then had the cap issues that they weren't able to get a Mahomes deal done when they wanted to. They weren't able to get Chris Jones done. They weren't able to bring back Sammy Watkins, which is another thing that they did this offseason. They kept LDT and just restructured that deal. They did all of that after winning a Super Bowl in an offseason that could have been much more tumultuous. And they're still, in 2020, paying Eric Berry $8 million. I mean, it's his cap number, at least. They're feeling the weight of the Eric Berry contract more than they're feeling the weight of anything that directly led them to a Super Bowl this year. The Chiefs won the Super Bowl. And they're in as good, if not a better place to do it again next year. Even with all of the injury issues they had last season, Patrick Mahomes had his kneecap on the side of his leg. They worked through all of those. And now, they've got everybody back, except for Kendall Fuller and Stefan Wisniewski. But they've got everyone from that Super Bowl run back of you know, legitimate major consequence. But right now, everyone is healthy. And, you know, Juan Thornhill comes back, who wasn't there for the Super Bowl run. People say they bring back 20 of the 22 starters. That should include Juan Thornhill. He would be an improvement on that defensive side. They made all these difficult choices. They did all of this math, and no one would have blamed them if they would have had to have eaten some vegetables in this offseason to go, well, all right, this is where things start getting a little bit tough. And this is the magic of how you work an NFL salary cap. The year things get tough should always be next year. Perpetually. I don't mean that it should be 2021 and you have that problem and you get to 2021. I mean, in 2021, they're going to figure out how to move some of the things that would be difficult to 2022. And then at 22, they're going to move them to 23 and the cap's going to go up. They're going to move them to 24 and then they're going to move it to 25. That is sort of the rolling strategy here. And then as long as you keep doing that, where you eat some money but move some the next year, that will be the strategy until eventually the league dissolves in 2097. Because at this point, moon football is the real hot thing. And I think the Chiefs have been not only thinking that way, but executing that way in a way that I've been tremendously impressed by. And it's going to happen now with Chris Jones, and I just could not be much more excited about it. Thanks again to Seth for joining us. Thanks to Beards for being back, pushing the buttons. No show tomorrow night, Sporting Kansas City, back here on Sports Radio 810. So we will talk to you Thursday night at 8 o'clock. Until then, enjoy Chris Jones Day, and bye, Mom.
You are listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.